Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey everyone, dropping in at the start of the show to remind you that coming up very, very shortly in Melbourne, we have got three live shows.
That's right, we're doing three unique, different live shows. Not podcasted, just fun live events at the Cooper's Inn during the Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
Those dates, for those of you who are interested, which I assume is 100% of you, 7th of April, 14th of April, 21st of April, all at 3 p.m. at the Cooper's Inn. It's
That's a good
place to come and have an afternoon of going like this.
Yeah, a couple of woo!
don't be like that.
No, just laugh naturally.
Yeah, you'll laugh whether you want to or not. That's
tickets,
how funny it is.
Tickets are selling fast for the first show. Get in if you want to come along to that.
Yep.
If you want to come to all three, get the season pass. It's a little bit of a discount for you.
So, great special guests lined up. It's going to be a lot of fun. And like we said, you got to be in the room to experience it because we're not putting them out anywhere. Always love meeting the filth at the live things that we do. So yeah, come on down. Get tickets now, filthycasuals.com.au or comedyfestival.com.au if you're so inclined.
Link in the description too.
Yeah.
Would love to see you there.
Linkin Park.
They won't be there.
These kids here in Denver are playing the newest rage in arcade games, Dragon's Lair. You've seen how different this game looks from the average video game. The reason is the players are actually playing a movie.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Daslow and with me, as always,
Ben Vanel here, and we've sent him down to the Game Developers Conference and he's got all the news that's fit to print. It's roving reporter Adam Knox.
Bad news. I went to GDC, but I typed the wrong one into Google Maps.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you know it, I ended up at
the
Let me run through a bunch of G words.
Garfield.
Good.
Yep.
Dog.
Mm-hmm.
Kennel.
Yeah.
And they'd misspelled it.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bad convention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of good kennels there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The typo was a shame, but
It's good kennels, not good dogs.
A lot of AI powered kennels these days. Yeah. You know, they know when the dog's going to come in there. They order the dog's food automatically.
It is more efficient, but it's way less personal.
Oh, it's the dogs are going to be taken over by AI.
Yeah.
And they'll be the batteries and we'll get away with it.
Okay.
They won't be using us in the batteries. It'll be a dog matrix.
Yep.
Simple to make. Why didn't they just use dogs?
Yeah.
That movie fucking sucks.
Oh, because humans wouldn't, like, scientifically, humans wouldn't have worked either.
No, but if you're going to go down the road, all you need to do for a dog matrix is make one field.
Yeah.
And you're fine forever.
Yeah, true.
And you get big dogs. Get a whole bunch of, like, you know, Irish wolfhounds or whatever.
Sure.
And you've got yourself a fucking matrix.
Why don't you put the dogs in hamster wheels? Like, dog-sized hamster wheels.
There you go.
Yeah.
Ring, ring, Wachowskis.
But the dog's more likely to be like, Joey Pantalone in that film.
What are you talking about?
It's always going to pick the steak.
Oh,
I want the steak.
Yeah.
What's a Joey Pantalone?
You know, well, he's his character in the film.
His name's Joe Pantoliano. Firstly.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay.
I forgot it because he's on.
His name's not Joe Pantalone.
I follow
Joey
him on,
Pantalone.
I follow him on Instagram, and he's Joey Pants on there.
Yeah.
I've seen that so many times that I've just become detached from what his actual name is.
Yeah, Joey I understand Pants. What's going on.
But a dog, given the choice from the agent, the dog's always going to go, I want the damn steak.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As you've got it set up.
Yeah.
this is an inevitability. And the dog's like, oh.
Speaking of AI, though, like the, you know.
Yeah, please huge, let's.
Huge debate. You know what I haven't heard it mentioned in relation to is like in video, in like enemy, that you know, that's always been the big
right,
thing.
Right, that's the one we've already known about.
Yeah, like in a Nintendo 64 game, it was really like that era was when it was really talked about of like you would get a shooting game and it would be like, oh, the enemies really suck. That was the thing that like would elevate a game was like yeah. if the enemies seemed
Half-Life.
A bit more realistic.
Right. Yeah. Big thing of Half-Life's early chat was the AI in this game is crazy. So we can probably draw it back to there when the dogs all end up in the Matrix.
Yeah.
Well, it's Gordon Freeman's fault. Mm.
But yeah, a bit. But you still do.
Ironically.
But games do still come out where people, you know, kind of are off it because of how the enemies react. Like even in something like Last of Us 2, I feel like there were a few points where people, or like companion AI where the whole... Yeah. The first one is particularly guilty of that where you're meant to be sneaking around and your companion can just be like jumping up and running around and it's the enemies aren't detecting it because that would be unfair. But
yeah,
like,
a lot of Dragon's Dogma 2's stuff is, well, we'll talk about it during this episode, but the AI in that is a big part of why it is such a weirdly put together mess technically.
Right.
Is my understanding.
I think at this point, because like, yeah, there was a point where I was like, oh, this is revolutionary. You only hear about it when it's bad these days.
The AI stuff.
Yeah.
It's just not ready yet is my impression of it is that like it's one of those, and it often happens with tech and especially when tech overlaps with like dickhead business people is you get like this thing that's not baked yet coming out of the oven and people being like, eat these muffins. You're like, it's fucking... Flour? What's in a muffin?
Yeah.
Okay,
flour,
good.
Water, sugar.
This is an egg.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, me and Ben were talking recently about, what are the things, what are the the uses for AI that aren't going to take away someone's like creative job?
A couple of podcast lads going to Japan and chatting about AI.
Chatting AI. But yeah, like what are the uses for it that no one is, or people aren't really going to be, you know, not just like, oh, we got it to design this poster or whatever. It's like, well, a person could have like actually made that better. And yeah, in the case of like immersive gameplay and a computer controlled player seeming realistic, that's a great one where like there's a point where human development on that can only go so far. So having it actually be an alive thing within the game.
People have definitely talked about that element of it with like ongoing content too, like automatically generate. And you already get this in games. There are like mods for Skyrim where you can speak to the characters
right,
and they'll reply to you with some implementation of, I don't know if it's ChatGPT, but one of those language models. So you can have chats with people.
Kramer get iPad.
Yeah, exactly. It's all going on, but it's just that lot of it is broken enough still at this point that it's not better.
Yeah, that was a story I think we forgot about. It was like maybe dropped the day after last week's pod that Ubisoft put out a big thing, like an official announcement, like we are experimenting with like generative AI replacing dialogue in our games.
Well, there was
everyone hated that.
Yeah, the Prince of Persia game that came out recently, when it launched, there was a character that the voice was AI.
Right.
And I think they were like, oh, that was a placeholder that we forgot to take out. And people were like, was it? That seems like a very weird thing to slip under the radar for such a big studio.
Yeah.
It'll become, as all technology like this sort of does, more and more integrated until we don't think about it anymore. You don't think about like Wi-Fi really. You know what I mean? But there was a point where it was like, fucking hell, the internet's wireless.
Wi-Fi's taken away jobs from the person who comes
cables.
To your house and connects the cable up.
What happened to the cups with the strings between them?
I mean, that's the thing. People are freaked about it, but you know, people when Siri launched were like, oh, here we go. This is the end of everything. And it's like, I'll be driving along and I'll say, call, you know, Lauren, and it'll be like, I don't know who that is. And it's like, okay, it's only my fucking fiance who I communicate with multiple times a day.
Yeah.
And the phone still can't get its head around that. So that's been like, what, 10 years?
Yeah.
It's that stuff to like, the big negatives about AI that people are scared of are less AI's fault and more where we are in like attitudes towards employment.
Yeah.
So
I feel like we've maybe talked about this even where like
the problem is capitalism, not it's tool.
Always my answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. It's like people will use, I mean, people using it to do deep fake stuff and all that kind of stuff. It's like, well, that's not That's not the programmer's fault.
Right.
That's the people behind it.
And you still need to regulate tools that can be used to do bad things, but like...
But you need AI control.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what I think.
Yeah.
But yeah. Rein them in.
I think the Ubisoft position was like, it's going to be more immersive because it'll be more reactive. But it's not going to sound like a human because it's an AI and it's very difficult to make that sound natural. Mm. And also, we don't want something that is like rote and repeating, you know, language based on existing stuff.
Then
we
don't
want,
play a Ubisoft game
yeah.
already.
Yeah,
we want a creative writer to, you know, make something new.
And it really depends on the type of thing that you're making as well, I suppose, where there's plenty of stuff where it would just fill in more content for the types of games that could be serviced by that type of thing.
Yeah,
right.
But you can still tell after all this time. You can tell when someone's just clicked a button on a Photoshop filter.
Yes.
Versus kind of crafted something organically.
Yes.
And tools have been around forever. But you still, I think that it's like an uncanny valley thing where the brain can pick a person created this versus like this was a 1 second job.
I really do think it'll get there though. I don't think there's like... Stuff progresses like that. And like, you know, there was a point where they're like, well, 40 miles an hour, that's as fast as a steam engine goes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Stuff progresses.
I wonder if people can tell that this episode is AI. We just put a couple of prompts in and then didn't do an episode this
week.
There
are three main reasons why people won't be able to tell that this is AI. The first reason is, of course, that AI can be generated by a computer.
Fashion report, Adam, I love your sixth finger today. It's looking really beautiful.
Watch me eat this spaghetti. I turn into spaghetti. hey, the GDC, the Games Developers Conference was on.
Yes.
We weren't there. I don't know where it is even, but
no,
GDC took place and there are a few little bits and bobs that came out of that that were sort of interesting. A lot of rumor mill shit because it's all, you know, people who work in the same industry and there were protests and stuff there or some sort of demonstration.
This is a nice alignment of
labor union stuff.
People who were forced out of this industry.
Yeah.
This is a nice kind of lineup of Nintendo's next one coming along, Sony's mid-gen one. You know, like we are right. Mm. We are in the thick of it as far as rumors go. You know, a little overlap of all the companies having something coming up.
People's lips were getting a bit loose about a few things that like aren't verified, but are people like taking the temperature of some developer opinions on things. The big ones that I saw were a pretty wide thing of people being like, why are we bothering to fucking make Xbox versions of our games? Because it's a nightmare because we've got to do the Series S and then no one buys them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And with the PS5 Pro, like you said, people, and again, this is just opinions from some people who are developers, but going like, what's this for? This doesn't help. What? No one wants this. What are they doing? Which again, we also kind of think and it does echo Sony's strategy with the PS5 hardware wise of just we're putting this thing out why
it's slightly better I guess
because you've all of a sudden got the X, the S, the Pro, the 5. Maybe you want to still be getting your game to run on the PlayStation 4 is still pretty common even now. And then potentially the Switch 2 as well. Like you've and got maybe the most different, if you're like a third party that wants your game to come out on as many platforms as possible, you've got maybe the most different versions that you've got to put together than ever before.
In PC world, like you've always had to optimize for a bunch of different types of things, but you've got these like handheld PCs that are pretty common now.
Right. Yeah, so you've got to think
versions
about Steam
of things
Deck
get
the
more and more relevant.
Yeah,
you know,
it's you're almost, I assume, but like budget wise, you're like, okay, well, we do PC, and maybe we after that do a Steam verified, whatever it's called, certified version,
which I don't, I think,
or patch or whatever.
Yeah, there's some process that is set, but whatever.
And then like pick a console, just be like, okay, well, PS5, I guess.
Most games during this generation have been, it seems, targeting a PS5 as like this is what we should make the game for, and then iterate from there. Which there's always during each generation one of those, like the PS2 was kind of that, and then the 360 was kind of that, and so on,
which is also, all of that is kind of at odds with, I think, the, you know, all the like layoffs and all that dodgy stuff that keeps happening, because these like making a game for all these different platforms, it's like that needs more manpower.
Yeah.
That's like different, you know, you need all these like little different ecosystems in the one.
What if it simply needed a clever little computer
to
get in there and fiddle with it?
It is more likely that, because there are games development companies that just do ports as well.
Yeah.
And not even like ports, just like, yeah, we'll recertify this game for another console. Like, you got to assume those contractors are getting a shit ton of work while, full-time employees are getting laid off.
I don't know which pockets of things have been. It seems like it's pretty widespread, and it's a rough time for people in that industry. So again, worth acknowledging there. But some of the positive stuff, I suppose, that we saw from it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could go back to a time when a game coming out on two different consoles would just be completely different.
Having
a completely
different
version of a game on Xbox and on PlayStation would actually be all. You actually would have to take a stand and go, the way these ones kind of look and operate, that's the one that appeals to me. The aesthetics and the
console
vibe and
wars
feel.
Are back.
Exactly.
Artificially. I guess.
And we
that's
have no money for
right.
it, but yeah.
Yeah.
That had the two different versions of like Splinter Cell games that would be the cross-gen things, but like Call of Duty 3 or whatever would be different on the Xbox to the 360.
All those
and stuff.
Disney games across the Mega Drive and the SNES were like literally made by different teams, like
Game
completely
Boy Advance
different companies.
Versions of Crazy Taxi and shit that looked fucked and weren't good.
Yep.
But
Tony Hawk 2 on the GBA was fucking really good.
So cool.
That was somehow pulled
utterly
off.
Different.
The isometric one?
Isometric, but it still weirdly felt the same to play.
Right.
I remember
right.
it was like a launch game and the reviews being like, I know what you're thinking from looking at this, but this is actually pretty sick.
Nice.
In terms of that sort of, I don't know how much AI is a part of it. And like you say, AI has always been a thing and is just now a tag for a second type of thing or a more advanced version of it. But they showed off a bunch of Unreal Engine stuff there, which it feels like Unreal Engine 5, they've been gabbing about how good it is for years and years.
The current console.
And I don't think that there's been that much stuff that's come out with it. Like, I know Fortnite runs on it now or whatever, but like...
Yeah.
There was that Matrix demo thing.
Yeah.
Was Forspoken Unreal 5? Or
I
maybe
don't
that
think
was Unreal
so.
4. Yeah.
I don't even think that... I think that might have been the weird engine they used for Final Fantasy 15 or something.
Oh, right.
I think that was that.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, there's a bunch of weird shit all over the place, but they're showing Unreal Engine 5 and they showed some demos of like, here's how easy it is to iterate as a developer on like, say you've got this big thing in the middle of a path here and you want to move it over there, you just click and drag and it figures it out and puts some stuff in between, and it was pretty impressive looking.
Right.
Obviously within a box of a demo.
Yeah.
But and they've had stuff like that for development tools for ages and ages and ages too.
Yes.
Think about how many times you've seen the logo for Speed Tree.
Yeah.
And not even really thought about it.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
There was like the one thing I saw from this was the like, oh, what's it called? The metahuman? Metahuman. Their character, like human character generation stuff.
Right.
Where it's like now you can, like you say, as simple as using a slider to change like bone size and composite. Like you can, they're really getting in depth with facial animations and stuff like that, which was previously like, you know, Naughty Dog having to do motion capture and then fucking hone it and tweak it, you know, to the nth degree.
Do you know, weirdly, Unreal Engine has been used maybe more in like Disney productions than in video games. Like all of the backgrounds of so many shows now, I think Dune 2 used Unreal.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Like they have those massive screens that can move at the same rate of the camera. And that's part of what they were showing off with a demo here where they had Amy Hennig on the stage as well, who is working on, I think it's a Captain America game specifically.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But Black Panther was in it too. And they had a guy on the stage holding a camera walking around the stage, and the camera's movements were mapping directly to the game and stuff like that. So you can have directed footage that immediately translates into how the world is responding.
Right. Yeah, that was Marvel's 1943 Rise of Hydra.
And they showed sort of some tech stuff of that and like a couple of moments of you know, a Captain America speaking and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But that was the like so much of it is, and they're probably making a lot of money from this of, they definitely are.
Okay.
It's geared towards movie studios as well.
Right.
Because like computer animation tools are very useful in film production these days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of insight that you won't get from anywhere else because they wouldn't bother to fucking say it.
You'd never know we weren't actually there.
It's all cool stuff and it's all very, yeah. you know, like, but like I say with the Unreal Engine demos I've been showing for ages, in terms of actually playing games, it doesn't always seem to rapidly translate into, and now you can play something that
but
uses this.
Yeah, but it's all this stuff too. It's like the, you know, the leaked specs of the PS5 Pro. It's like right. who I barely feel like I'm getting the juice out of my base PS5 at this point. All this right. stuff means nothing if no one's gonna, if there's not the games to play on it and the experience isn't fun.
What I've seen as well with people talking about that is like, hey, I don't care as long as it, like, I'd love to play my games at 60 frames per second again, da da da.
Yeah.
Which is the part of it that is least likely to happen from what people were saying about the particulars of the specs of the PS5 Pro.
Right. It was more about like rendering, ray tracing better rather than yeah. it all being faster.
And a lot of the stuff, like with Dragon's Dogma 2, is CPU bound. Which yeah. isn't necessarily yeah. and, affected by this.
And also right. the problem is, you know, they iterate on a console and they go, oh, it's going to be, you know, this much more powerful. And so you kind of think about, oh, well, imagine this game that I'm playing current gen running on that. It would look sharper and right. it would run smoother. But then, of course, developers aren't just going to go, we'll make that and run it on that hardware and have it run better. They're going to go, well, how much can we really push the hardware right. and get out of it? So that's kind of ends up being the problem, is that everything that comes out for that hardware does end up running not as good as it could be because they're trying to push the hardware to its absolute limits. That's what yeah. like developers want to do.
Right.
So really the best thing to do is like get the new console and be playing your previous gen stuff on that.
Yeah. Which is what we've been doing for 4 years.
Yeah, because then it's going to be really optimized. But like no developer sits there and goes, great, we can have this run at 4K and 60 frames per second. They're going to go, but if we turn these screws up slightly, we can get this all looking a little better.
Yeah,
and
the trailer's
going to
look beautiful.
And people are fine with 30 frames per second anyway. So if we just crank this all up.
You're always going to fill up the bucket that you have and continue to strain whilst lifting it.
Yeah.
Also out of that, I think it's Sven Vinker is how you pronounce his name. I think he's the head of Larian Studios, who made Baldur's Gate 3.
Yes.
Larry Studios. No more fucking Baldur's Gate out of them. They're not going to do any DLC or expansion stuff. They're going to fix up some more patches and things like that. And then they're moving on to something else.
That's fair enough. There was that thing that, I don't know where this came from specifically, but there's like more words in the script than all the Lord of the Rings books put together.
Yeah,
and the total cutscene runtime across the whole game is more longer than Game of Thrones, which obviously you're not, no one player is going to see all of that in one playthrough. But like just what exists in the game is more than anything else basically ever. So I don't think they need to worry about
it
DLC.
It sounds like it would have been one of the toughest games to make as well. And
they made about 10 DLCs as the base experience anyway.
And like, apparently like they started working on a DLC and everyone just didn't want to do it. And so they kind of went, all right, actually this will just implode our studio.
Yeah.
And when it's been, I mean,
unhappily work on this. So they're going to move on to something else and everyone there is thrilled about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, DLC started as a thing to stop people from just trading the game in as soon as they were done with it.
I guess so.
And to, you know, because then the game maybe gets sold 3 or 4 times over.
Yeah.
And the studio or the publisher only gets like one sale out of that. So it was to incentivize people to hold onto their copies for longer. Which in the case of something like Baldur's Gate, it's like, people are doing multiple playthroughs of it. Their one playthrough has taken them, you know, hundreds of hours potentially. It's not something that needs, you know, like a single player 8 to 10 hour experience. A couple months later, you maybe want a little more juice. But just this idea that like everything just should have something more down the line. Not everything needs it if it's a completely full experience.
Having said that as well, though, like the characters in that game are so good and all of that stuff that I would have loved to have seen more of it.
Yeah.
Like out of any game that gets DLC just as a sort of like, well, you got to do
there
it.
Yeah.
This is one where like it's so open for that sort of thing. But
it is interesting.
It's more important to do something that creatively interests you.
Yeah, there's starting to be that real kind of shift. I mean, Tears of the Kingdom, I think people assumed, just because there had been a bit of DLC in the last one, that they'd end up doing it for that. And he was just like, no, we just We just put it all in there. There's nothing left on the whiteboard.
There was like, an interview with someone for that as well, being like, I don't think people understand how much we changed how that game worked from Breath of the Wild to Tears of the Kingdom as well, which was kind of interesting. But yeah, it's a shame in terms of like, I'd have loved to have played even more of that game.
Yeah.
But totally respect and accept that they're doing what they want to do.
That's very big of you.
Thank you. I'm not going to send my usual hate mail to them. No I threats still... coming from me. I actually happen to have grown.
I'm going to still send my yearly death threats to Sean Murray, though.
Oh, he still... needs to know.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, we have a thing now, so.
Yeah. You send him like a scary Christmas card every year. Yeah, he's like,
I've played his game.
He's like, oh, I guess I'll... do another update to No Man's Sky then?
I've played his game, so we're basically friends. Yeah. You know, we have a shorthand with each other. I can call him a fuckhead. Yeah, he gets it. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's kind of like what you said about Mario Wonder, Adam, was like, you don't want them to do that same thing again. You want them to like go and do what led to the, you know what I mean?
You
kind of long, like short term, getting a little bit more of that game would be great. But long term, what you'd rather is like, just get going on the next thing that's going to really surprise me the way this did.
The reason those characters are so good is because they created this interesting world to flesh them out in, and they wrote stories for those characters that were satisfying over the arc of that thing.
Yeah.
So just having them come back and be like, hey, guess what? Astarion's a baker now, and you've got to help him on a baking quest.
Or like, here's a little Griblet man who... has his own story, but we didn't take 9 years to make it, so it's not as good.
Do something exciting, because that's what was cool about that game is they found a fresh way of doing something that's been done for a while.
Did it the best that it can ever be done, and I genuinely wonder what their next game will be like, because like everyone in the whole industry was like, oh, we don't even know how the fuck they did one.
Yeah. And then they in their own company were like, whoa, let's fucking not do that again. Holy shit.
Yeah.
It really, like, have a little something simpler maybe next.
Yeah.
Or something
a
bit different.
Yeah.
Who knows? Speaking of something a bit different.
Monty Python? they were completely different.
They would have hated a logical segue like that as well.
Larian should make a game for the Playdate. That'd be a good pivot.
Oh, yeah.
Just like real, I would love massive studio. We just need a little reset.
That would be
huge budget.
Probably a really good idea for them to be like, yeah, we're doing something like a little go-kart racing game next or something.
Yeah.
We'll crank this out in a few months. There you go.
Yeah. Just crank it out.
Just whip it out. It's easy.
Yeah.
I could do it. Just don't want to.
This episode of Filthy Casuals is brought to you by NordVPN.
I've got a device, but I need... I'm going to have to throw my phone all the way to France.
Wait a minute, Adam.
This better be quick because my arm is real far back.
I've got a solution for you. It's called NordVPN. It can transport your device virtually to any country you like.
That was quick.
Yeah.
But and I no threw offense, it anyway. But it's got a better throwing arm than you.
It's got a really quick throwing arm. Yeah. Fast connections from my experience of having used NordVPN for many years now as my VPN of choice.
Yep.
Yeah.
To be secure on the internet, to be a traveler on the digital landscape.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a ton of uses and it can work on a ton of different devices very easily too. I've got it set up on phones, computers, my Apple TV.
Yep. Yep.
It's simple.
The
it's
PlayStation.
I don't know about that.
I don't know. But you can set it up on a router anyway, so you can do whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, your entire home can be VPN'd. I recently used NordVPN when I went to the country of Japan.
Yep.
And I watched some AFL football on a streaming service that is for Australians that I pay for.
Yep.
And I changed my location to Brisbane, I think, the server it gave me.
Damn.
I kept clicking Melbourne and they were like, no, Brisbane's closer.
Beautiful weather in Brisbane.
Yeah, true.
And you're feeling it through the warmth of your laptop screen. No, it works super well.
Yeah.
It's really useful for a bunch of different things. And if you go to nordvpn.com/filthy, well, darn me if you don't get a whole bunch of discounted months added on to
Absolutely.
Your subscription.
That's right. Sign up for 2 years, which is the best value proposition they offer, and you get 4 months free if you go to nordvpn.com/filthy.
That's a trimester. And I'm trying to have less mesta around my genitals, and I can do that. It's almost like I didn't plan. Manscaped, make products that, in my quite frank opinion, can shave your balls.
Now, I was recently in Japan. I don't know if you've heard about this, but I took my Manscaped with me. I took my beard hedger.
Yep.
It charges by USB, which is very handy because when you're in a different country, you might not have the right power outlet.
Yep.
So I charged it up and I took it and I shaved my beard to the length that I desired.
I've got my little pouch that they come in, and it's a high quality pouch thing that you get if you get the performance package, which includes a bunch of different things like their main lawnmower 5.0.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I got my pouch and I shaved it with the lawnmower 5.0.
But planning a trip. Absolutely planning on taking that and all of the Manscaped stuff inside of it.
Yep.
They make good products. If you've got hair on your body, they'll get rid of it for you.
If you want.
If you want.
And at a precise amount too.
Yeah.
I used the beard hedger the other day and that little twister thing to make the length different.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's very precise, right? It's like half centimeters or something.
It all works super, half millimeters or whatever.
Yeah.
Half a centimeter is quite a big difference when you're talking beard, I suppose.
Except for the ear and nose hair trimmer.
That's one length.
That's you don't get to go, oh, you know what? Leave a couple centimeters there.
Let me have some strands.
One size fits all for the ear and nose hair trimmer.
Makes me look rugged, you know? Makes me look like I haven't slept.
Yeah. I only just kind of
women
care about
it.
My nose hair.
If after you've picked your stuff, you use the code FILTHY, you get yourself 20% off and free shipping as well. So go to manscaped.com, chuck that code FILTHY in before you check out, and you get 20% off and free shipping from the fine folks at Manscaped. Hey, I played Dragon's Dogma 2.
Whoa!
You heard of this game?
I've heard of this game you telling us during the week that you were playing it.
Yeah.
So this is simpler than Baldur's Gate 3.
In a way. Mm. It's also a lot more complicated in another way, where it is a bizarre game that has a lot of people up in arms.
Wow.
They like, what is that?
What does that mean? Up in
like
arms?
Swords, I suppose. Getting your arms. Not like you've been picked up and you're like, put me down. I'm furious and I'm up in arms.
I hate this. I mean, I would hate that. So I relate to that usage more than the swords.
It would weirdly be a put down.
Yeah.
Even for someone to pick you up. A lot of people got mad at this game during the week for reasons that do make sense, but
dodgy monetization.
Mm.
It's the same shit that Capcom have been doing for a while with their single player games, but for whatever reason, this one was a lot more immediately egregious to people, and also a little misrepresented by some of the reporting on it, I do feel.
I think this is the one that's a bit easier to not so much take out of context, but you see a screenshot of $2 to
Fast travel.
$2 to redesign your player character.
Yeah.
Like you just see a screenshot of that if you haven't interacted with the game, and it really looks very bad.
I also think the reason there was a bit of like a, you know, spike of negativity is because that was not in the games for reviewers. So that was something that came online, like often, you know, storefronts and shit do.
Yeah.
Like they wait until they release.
Same exact thing happened with Resident Evil 4 last year.
Right.
And
reviews come out, big raves, 8s, 9s, 10s across the board, and then that drops and people kind of feel like the combo of if the reviewers had an inkling that this was in there and this thing has gotten glowing praise sort of flaws with it.
It was in the review packets that they were given. People just didn't read them because those things are often...
Right.
Just, I'm going to play it, so why would I? Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, yes, and I agree that it's like, it's just obviously just gross penny trying to get... It's
money grabbing?
Yeah, money grabbing.
Not penny pinching.
Not penny pinching, that's the opposite. You'd be penny pinching by not getting it. You'd be sensible to not get it because what's on offer is in-game items that you already readily get. The problem is that they're attached to things in the design of the game that sound crazy.
Mm.
And in some ways are, where like you have a thing called a fairy stone that is your fast travel, one of the options.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a consumable item that lets you fast travel.
Yep.
In the game... It's built around that because the game wants you to
explore,
run around.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's not to excuse charging for that. I'm just saying you won't be missing out on shit if you are not buying any of this. And don't do it.
Yeah.
You don't need to. And
I guess,
you won't
be. You shouldn't. Yeah.
Anything that's a quality of life thing. And again, it's not, even if it's like doesn't really impact this game too much, just the precedent that it starts to establish.
I hate the way they're doing
having
it.
An easy mode that costs an extra $20 or like any of those like quality of life things, like paying for a higher tier weapon or a costume or a cosmetic
or something
thing is like fine, but a little thing like it, I mean, it's getting into real Candy Crush territory of like, pay $10 for 5 extra lives or
and
whatever.
Even those things only appear fine through attrition to us now as well, where like they weren't for ages and then they were just done enough and people kind of bought the line of like, well, it's all extra stuff, it's all cosmetic, but like it would have been in the game in the past. Like you used to have costumes in games.
It used to be unlockable through gameplay.
And people got less and less mad at it over time as like the horse armor thing in Oblivion was the first time I remember people being like, excuse me, I beg your pardon. And then that seems quaint in comparison now.
Totally.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
These things suck, but like don't be scared that they have ruined the game by doing this, because I'm not of the opinion that that's the case. However, there are problems with the design of that game that these items overlap with that I think is part of the issue too. But Resident Evil 4 had the same stuff and it is still bad, but I'm just saying don't worry too much. But so like the stuff of changing your character's appearance is like an item that you buy and do it. The reason that that's partly annoying to people is that this game only has one save file currently, and they said they're going to patch this.
Yeah.
You can't restart the game. You can't start a new game. You can't have a second person start their own file.
That's
just really, really base, simple stuff.
Animal Crossing.
Like, it is like Animal Crossing, like, you know, the saves for that were weird. The saves for that are very weird because you can, like, download. Do you know you can download Osama bin Laden's Animal Crossing save file?
I did not
know
that.
Off of, like, the CIA's repository.
Oh, wow.
It's, like, Public Information Act shit. So you can download. It's really weird. He had a DS. A second screen has hit the Game Boy.
Oh, my God. I do remember that day that the contents of his hard drive were published and he was like had all these Fire Emblem ROMs and stuff.
And pirated versions of Final Fantasy VII.
That
and
was
shit
the
like
one
that.
I remember,
Man, I'm gonna download Bin Laden's save file and give it over to Lauren and just let her run loose and be like,
figure it out.
You having a good time?
Yeah.
Guess whose compound you're running around in?
Very weird world that we live in. A wild world, some might call it. That was the version of Animal Crossing on the DS.
Sick, sad world.
But so, yes, the Pokemon games and stuff like that on the Nintendo things are similar. But even then, you can delete the save file and start again if you want to. You can't really do that easily.
Let you delete
it. It's crazy. That's really, really weird.
I kind of like it. It's pretty funny.
No, you've made your bed. Now lie in it.
It's such a weird decision.
Yeah. So much about this game is with that sort of attitude of like, you fucked it.
Fuck you.
People die and then they go to like a morgue in the city. This is like NPCs and you can revive them with a limited wake stone, which is one of the other items that you can buy. But
I heard something about how it's like quite buggy to the point where like just through a weird bug with the game, like people's entire towns or whatever, like dying.
There's tons of shit that. I got back to the city the other day and there were wolves in there and I don't think they were meant to be. And no one was really reacting to them properly. But I killed the wolves and they weren't a big of a deal. But it's...
Yeah, my copy has this weird bug where all the townspeople are telling me I've got the littlest penis they've ever seen. And that surely can't be meant to be happening.
Yeah, this is the first game where they actually implemented AI that knows the size of your dick. It's a very quirky game.
Right.
It is very, it has its own thing that it's doing. And one of those ones that's sort of designed around what it wants to do rather than any sort of like, oh, well, this is how people have figured out how to make games.
Right.
It's a gone back to the drawing board type of thing, which works both in its favor in some ways and against it in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is an open world combat focused adventure action game type of thing, an RPG type of guy. You start off, you make your person, you better fucking get it right.
Yeah,
no pressure.
You can change it later at a hairdresser and it's a limited item, but you can buy them.
Okay.
Like it's you can change how you look.
Just know if you make handsome Squidward, it is gonna cost you.
So then you
change him back.
You make a pawn as well. Don't have to tell me twice.
Yeah. My dad wrote one of those.
PAWN. So get your minds out of the gutter and into the chess room.
My dad fucked a chessboard.
It's a great podcast. My dad played chess.
They could make pornos about that. I'm sure there's a butt plug chess porno by now.
Oh yeah,
of course.
So they're your helper. You have three of them at all times. One that's your main one that you've made.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, you don't have to have them at all times, but you can hire up to three of them, including your main one, and then two others. Which the primary way that you get these is by other people's main ones that they've made. Come into your world and walk up to you in the middle of nowhere and go, I am loyal and I like to collect items.
Hell
and
yeah.
And then you can either choose to hire them or not. Sort of like Animal Crossing villagers a little bit. They'll just show up and be like,
But they're like other actual players' ones through the internet.
There are some that are pre-made by Capcom that will fill it out when you don't have those, but then the majority of them are other people's legit internet ones. That's and it cool. automatically uploads your one to the server.
Right.
When you've made yours, it's in the pool.
Yeah, is that's cool.
Thing where you can just download the character creator as well. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can.
That's pretty cool.
And they put that out early so you could sort of get all that done and be ready to just.
And you could make multiple characters in that, but then only take one of them into your save. It is weirdly made and they've already said they're going to fix that. So it is people going like, this is dumb. And they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Game of the year, Dragon's Dogma 2. Let me finish. Character creator. Not the actual game.
No.
Just sitting there and making weird little cunnies for hours on end.
So these guys mean that you have a party of four, not quite the show. And
Who got left out? Matthew Fox?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to name. Jessica Biel?
Scott Wolf?
She was Seventh Heaven.
Yeah.
That's way too many pawns. And so you're this little fighting group. You can have, there's a bunch of different classes that either you can be or they can be.
Mm-hmm.
Fighter, mage, thief.
Oh, yeah.
Are you getting the picture?
Yeah.
And then like.
Barbarian?
Super fighter. I think warrior is. Okay. And ones that are sort of advanced and maybe a bit weird and different.
Mm-hmm.
You're leveling up. You're getting more skills. You're buying them with points. You're attaching them to the face buttons. If you hold L1 and push a button, mm-hmm. then you're doing your skill.
This mm-hmm. is classic stuff.
It's really fun.
Yeah, nice.
It feels so weighty and it feels so like physical. The fights are so. Like punchy and like tough feeling in a similar way to something like Monster Hunter, but even more just you're in this world and you're fucking throwing your sword around. It really feels like there's some solidness to it. On top of the sort of sometimes awkward interactions of the AI. Ever heard of it? And stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That
artificial intelligence
can make for it being
by Steven Spielberg,
partly.
Yeah.
Those interactions are like emergent combat things. As an example, you could be fighting a golem on top of a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh, a fucking griffin also lives on this cliff and he's flown down now and is attacking you. But then the cool thing is you climb up on the back of this griffin.
What?
And you punch it and it goes... and... You're climbing around on the bigger monsters to get up to their weak points up on their necks. And
I saw a thing on Twitter of like a backs, like a big troll thing and it
pussies it, cracks
and you're standing on the other side of a cliff face and it kind of falls over and it's like making a bridge across the cliff face.
Yeah. Yep.
And the player kind of like runs over its back and then just starts smashing it on the back of the ankle and then it falls into the cliff. And I was like, this game looks pretty good.
It's really cool. If you're on the back of a griffin and you're kind of beating it and then it's like, all right, fuck you, flies way up into the air with you on its back holding on, your stamina going down, which, you know, it's your grip strength as well. And you're like, well, you fucking got me, brother.
Yeah.
Snook it.
Now, is this a thing where like the dragon's dog, like this?
But then you fall and one of your pawns catches you.
Oh!
It's the best feeling in the world.
Wow.
Okay, that's
they are
cool.
So supportive of you at all times. They're like, Master, that is an incredible choice you've just made.
Hell yeah.
Well done. Expertly executed. And even if you have ones, they've got sort of different personalities. And even the sarcastic ones are like, looking in a chest again, are you? Well, we probably should. Like,
it's
still
not an honor to serve. Just kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
is this being Dragon's Dogma 2, is this like an Alan Wake 2 sort of situation where it's really heavily following on, or is it more of a thing where it's just like a Final Fantasy, like a complete reset?
My understanding of it, having not played the first one, is that it's almost like a remake.
That's what I've heard. And is it Is it true? I put to you that most of the time, like, it's just calling itself Dragon's Dogma.
On the title screen, it says Dragon's Dogma, but it isn't talking about itself very often. It's very humble.
Okay.
But characters in the game aren't going, boy, I love being inside this game of Dragon's Dogma.
The dragon is back, and he's got more dogma than ever.
I do love that title screen not having the two on it.
Mm.
Like
the way the developers have...
By the wrong fucking
guy. Yeah.
The way the developers have talked about it in the lead up to is like, oh, we're getting to make the thing we wanted to make because we couldn't make it years ago.
Yeah. Cool.
And guess what? They still can't. Because right. So it runs fucking really badly. It's like...
What are you playing it on?
The PS5.
Okay.
And it runs like a PS3 game would.
Yeah.
Remember they were just like sluggish and like a much lower normal frame rate.
Well, this is like exactly what I was talking about where they're like... Oh, we're getting to make the game we wanted to make when they're imagining the hardware that's available now. But now they're on the hardware that's available now. They're not going, oh, we'll just do what we wanted to do 10 years ago. It's like, no,
we've still got imagination.
We got to push it. Yeah, we want to go further.
And it runs poorly on high-end PCs as well and all that sort of stuff. A lot of why seems to be because every single individual actor in this world being, you know, the townspeople, the enemies, everything, they're all independently controlled and they're all thinking for themselves and everything, which like cool in concept, in practice it means the game can't really draw them in until you're quite close to them. Mm-hmm. So you're walking around town and people like bleh, and they like kind of pop into the screen and then like wake up a little bit.
Have
this moment where they're like, oh, I should go to the shop. And it looks funny, but...
That probably is what I look like walking down the street with my ADD brain. Like, how the fuck am I out of the house? What am I meant to be doing?
It's a whole city full of those people who are like, oh, right, I'm the ox cart driver. But the way in which that benefits the game is that you do have these moments of combat where, like, so one of the fast travel systems is getting in an ox cart and dozing off while it gets to the other town. But then sometimes you'll get woken up in the middle of your trip and they'll be like, uh-oh, a cyclops. Watch out. And you'll have to get out and fight the thing and it'll smash the ox cart and kill the ox. Then those guys are dead. Unless you want to go and revive them in the crypt or whatever, that ox cart doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
The Cyclops got him, but you got to fight the Cyclops. So all of that stuff is like, it's very, it's not super hard, but it's very permanent feeling.
Right.
It feels like the things you're doing have an impact, which is a cool feeling. Like the whole game is built around that tone.
Right.
Where like, if you don't go and do this quest right now, the person who you're having to save in the quest will obviously die because they're in a harpy's nest or whatever. So, of course, they're going to get eaten.
And that is such a rare thing in games. Like, I remember being a teenager and being like, oh, imagine a game where, like, when you die, you actually, you know, like, there's so nearly every game is like, you kill everyone in a room, you leave the room, you go back in, the enemies are all back. Like, that idea of, like, this world, what you do in this world has a sense of permanence to it.
Yeah.
Right.
Is that is the thing that like technologically is like developers don't really seem to want to tackle too much because that is just this like very video gamey suspension of disbelief that's like, no, this has to be here.
Which this still does have a lot of that too. It's still very gamey where like if I think after a while, like if a bridge is destroyed, it'll kind of get rebuilt in a week or whatever.
Right.
And
it'll
be like, oh, someone might have done
but
it.
But hey, that
time.
That can happen.
Or like, hey, someone else went to the crypt and revived this character because we wanted to just repopulate the ox carts.
Right.
So you didn't hate the game.
And then like there are like the Bethesda games are like pretty famously like, everything has like its own permanent piece of code that is like, if you move that apple, then when you go back to that room, the apple will have been moved. It doesn't mean the game is necessarily better.
Yeah.
But like you,
it feels more lived in and believable. But also that does put a lot of strain on like the game having to remember.
Yeah,
that's why you know the Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom have that Blood Moon thing. It's to like reset everything because the game struggles to keep tabs on this entire world and like what you've done to it.
This is that same school of thought of just like, well, we should make everything stick in place and everything should have happened always.
Yeah,
afterwards,
which is good. Like especially for like a role playing game that you really get into.
Yeah. It's cool. I think the role-playing aspect of it and the story part of it is one of the weaker elements of the game, though. Like, you know, I've done a fair bit of the sort of main story stuff, and it's a bit of like, oh, well, the false king is da-da-da, and you're actually the real king, and we love you, Arisen. Everyone who is working for you, they love you.
I'm picturing Adam sitting down to play this and he's got a little crown on his head and he's like, yeah, I'm not really vibing the story all that much. It's a little it's a little tedious. And then he goes home and puts on his robe.
it's all very you know, medieval English sort of style of writing as well, where mm-hmm. they're like, is there ought to do? They say the word ought all the time. Like, it just means something, I guess. Mm-hmm. As in, it means the word something, not it means something. My friend who is playing first base.
Well, but I mean, both are true.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
means something and it means something. the Japanese take on medieval English, I love.
Oh,
I
yeah.
love that. That filtration system of...
It's the English take on it that's bothering me, where, like, some of the voice acting is pretty... There's a lot of different voices in it, it seems like, and, you know, every character I come across, they don't have noticeably similar voices,
yeah,
at the
yeah,
very
yeah.
least. Okay. But it does mean that I'm getting the impression they were all reading their lines in a fairly short amount of time, because people will have wildly different interpretations of the same... Like, a lot of people have been talking about, I forget the specifics, I forget individual examples, but I don't think they help to prove a point.
you just take it on sort of faith.
the word air.
Mm. Oh, yeah, you mentioned that one.
Apostrophe ER,
yep.
forever.
Yep.
One line reading, the guy was like, and you know this guy, he's... The Optimist. Just read it as though it was and
oh,
that was
right.
really funny to
you
me.
You mentioned yeah. this in our chat and you were like, get a load of this for a weird line read. This is what it's meant to say. And then what I thought we were going to get was an audio recording from the actual game, and what it was you speaking the line into your
yeah.
phone.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, this voice actor really sounds a lot like Adam.
So yeah, all of that sort of stuff is up and down. But
this is like a AA game though, right? This isn't a massive game.
It's Capcom. It's a big.
Yeah,
it's a big
that's
game.
True. That's yeah. There is a reasonable.
And
budget.
This was like when we were, you know, this has just come out, and so when we were in Japan, this was getting, you know,
yeah.
a lot of the stores that you'd walk past had like a big, like commonly they're like an electronics store. They'll have like a big TV out the front, like
yeah.
really blasting you with stuff for this game. So they were selling it pretty hard.
Yeah,
and it's like an advanced game. Like, it looks good when it runs poorly, but it looks nice and.
Just like me.
The main meat and potatoes of the actual fighting in this game, though, is so fun.
Right.
And you're doing a hell of a lot of it, often against the same enemies over and over.
Okay.
Because, like, when you're walking from A to B, there's a ton of fucking baddies along
right.
the way.
Mm.
You're
out
really,
in the wilderness.
They're living there.
What and kind of baddies are we talking?
We're talking goblins. We're talking harpies. We're talking wolves. We're Oof. Talking... Minotaurs. We're talking that
Whoa.
Sort of, you know.
That's yep. how I feel when I walk in to do this in the summer. Baddies everywhere.
but
Nothing but baddies.
it's one of those...
Not to give away the location of where we record.
Well, I think
but
that's...
But, there's a lot of baddies around here.
I think that's way too specific.
Do you know as well that baddies is slang for hot girl?
Oh, yes.
Because that's what I thought you meant at first. I was
no,
like,
it is what I meant.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's
right.
what I continue to mean.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant villains.
Yeah.
Because there are some villains
well,
as well.
Well, there are some villains, yeah. but yeah, mostly.
Mostly bomb-ass
so,
babes.
that part of it is super fun. Like
right.
fighting people out there, you're having a good time. I've been playing as a fighter class for the whole time so far, and I'm just leveling that one up right now because I'm enjoying having that with like a mage to heal you and do
right.
some fire mm-hmm. attacks or whatever sometimes. Get an archer to shoot things up high in the sky
mm-hmm.
and then a thief as well who can run around and get people ooh. Real quick.
Love
it's a good combo, a classic
yeah.
Final Fantasy 1 style
yeah,
combo.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it just feels really unique and cool and very engaging, the combat. It's like it's just on the right tip of being demanding versus feeling like you've got some power over it. You're having to like camp and rest and reset
mm-hmm.
because as you take damage, your overall amount of health will go down with that.
Oh,
yeah. Sure.
So you're like forced to take breaks, and overnight the world will become a lot more dangerous. So it's good to set up camp, cook some food to give you buffs for the next day. And then it's got
oh.
these weird inserts of like just real life cooking They've just filmed throwing some steaks onto like
that's great.
Camping camping pots.
See, this is like this
what
is
a weird game.
It's really weird the whole way through.
This is what is such a shame about these business decisions that companies make about this like monetization stuff without really thinking about like I don't know if it's that they're unaware or that they just don't care.
They've gotten away with literally this exact type of monetization as well for a long time. Monster Hunter had it. Resident Evil 4 had this exact same thing of like coin bonus A, coin bonus B, coin bonus C in the shops. And this is the same thing that this is doing.
But this is the shame is that that then becomes the headline. And you see this with a lot of games. That becomes the overall headline and it detracts from what the actual story should be. Which is that they've made this like cool, quirky, weird game that's a lot of fun, but people just get hung up on the... And then obviously, you know, not that this is necessarily their fault, but then people get into the review bombing and it like, you know, all this stuff just ends up kind of tarnishing the overall, like what the narrative of this game coming out should be.
And look, this has had the 1-2 punch of having the egregious monetization and the bad performance, which are two things that people do... view as just like that's crossing a line that I don't respect, like
that's the I'm not buying this game kind of
I mean bad performance is like people tend to go I'm gonna wait for a few months until it's patched, but I feel like people are more inclined with the monetization stuff to be like I'm gonna really make a point here.
But I also think those people say that but then end up buying the game
and
anyway.
Also probably enough people buy it and do engage with buying the fast travel item and whatever that
that's,
it does
that's
make
the gamble they're making,
worthwhile.
Right?
Yeah.
To review a game on Steam, you have to have bought it. So if it's getting review bombed on Steam, you can refund a game within 2 hours or whatever, but...
I think the reviews also say if you've done that, right?
They say the amount of hours played, I think, is all right. Maybe it says they returned, I don't know. But so, their legitimate gripes with the game that I also share, but I don't want the reporting of it to misrepresent... The
it's easily avoidable.
It's not as severe as it maybe seems on the face of it to your actual enjoyment of the game, but it is still just like grubby corporate shitty. Like, what items in this game can we also sell?
It should still be discouraged,
it's very bad.
Yeah,
but you can ignore it. But it shouldn't happen anyway.
It's a weird double-edged sword where like the fact that you can ignore it completely in the game speaks to the fact that it shouldn't be there at all. Which then it's like, well, so what? You're saying that the argument is like if it's going to be in there, it should be absolutely necessary. You know, it's like is a bit of a... But yeah.
It's just yuck. But it's as yuck as, you know, the fucking... Worm Cup from June or whatever. It's like, this is nothing to do with the movie. Why the fuck are you selling me this? But it's worse than that because it's not as valuable as a horny cup.
But you're right in the way that things get completely normalized. Like, you know, back in the 80s when they were like, oh, we're going to make a new version of the Nintendo Entertainment System that none of your old games will work on.
Yeah.
People at the time were like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right.
I spent a few a few hundred bucks on this thing and now... I have to get are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, that, you know, that was a thing that people were up in arms
about. And maybe
about.
They were right all along.
Yeah.
They probably were.
So if you're looking for a, like, very, a strong-willed, strong personality sort of game.
Right. A unique take on a traditional genre.
You might not vibe with it.
Yeah.
But, if you do, it's something that kind of isn't being done in this same way by anyone else. Like the type of combat feels a bit like sort of a Monster Hunter cross with like a slow action game like a Bayonetta or whatever. It's nothing to that sort of scale, but that type of and a little kind of Soulsy, and like the different classes and weapons make a pretty big impact and the different skills do change how you're playing it quite a lot. And that stuff is really like... solid and fun, and it's been so like it's threatening to walk around the world and to explore it, and the reward for doing it is in that combat that is it's so cool to climb on top of a big thing, of a dragon, for example. A very dogmatic dragon might show up and you're like, hey, get with the times, brother,
loosen up.
And fighting this thing and it flying around and you're having to climb on it and it knocking over all of your people. You're having to revive. Like, that shit is great.
Oh, yeah, cool.
You only control one character?
You're just one guy. The rest of them are all doing their own thing.
They're all AI.
But you can, well, as scary as it might be, that is what they are. But
they're helping you.
You're choosing what classes and what sort of personalities, and you can give them some abilities. And
right.
And that sort of stuff is great, like going through and like switching them up. And, you know, you travel with them for a couple of weeks, and you're like, wow, I've outgrown you.
Yeah.
Got to see you off. Because the, the ones who aren't your main pawn won't level up.
Mm.
So you've kind of got to refresh that pool every
right.
so often. And, you know, then your person, after you sleep sometimes, will come back and be like, I just had a fucking adventure off with someone else.
Yeah.
Learned a couple of things, and then they might learn where the location of like a chest is and go, I actually saw
it's
a chest here in another world. So,
wow, this AI, it's so, there's nothing it can't do. It'll cure cancer one day.
All of those ideas are so cool.
Yeah, that's very creative.
They work really well. All of the quests are like maybe a little by the numbers-y in some ways where they're like, oh, I sure wish I could find this thing. But then the journey to go and get it has so much fun combat along the way that
right.
does feel like it is emerging in that, you know, it's not a planned thing for this griffin to show up, but it's gonna.
Yep.
And then you dealing with it is super fun and changes quite significantly. It appears, even though I've just been playing as a fighter, but I've had a bunch of the other pawns be the other classes, and it changes up what you can do pretty significantly. So all of that part of it is super cool. And if you are into it, then yeah, you're going to get it out of this game in a way that you kind of can't in exactly the same formula somewhere else.
Cool.
But technically a mess, so don't be in a rush. They are going to patch it.
Yeah, right. Hold off. Maybe.
It's probably worth giving it a minute or two to bake a little further.
Mm-hmm.
But if it appeals to you, then it probably is something that you'll end up appreciating your time with.
Right. Cool. Hell yeah.
Well, what I've been doing this week,
anyone ask?
No. Now that you mention it, no, they didn't.
Give us the opportunity. Tommy, I'd love to know what you were doing this week.
I'm going to leave the room because I could not give a shit.
I took I decided to give a hard pass to Princess Peach Showtime.
Yeah.
Played the demo and seems competent enough. It is 4 babies.
Yep.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. I've enjoyed.
It's a weird. The Rugrats. That's
yeah.
4 babies.
Yeah.
They made it specifically for Chucky Finster. I have enjoyed my time with your Kirbys. And
sure.
I talked about that game Euphoria to the Saga last week.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, just not really like design wise doing it enough for me to be like, oh, I'm enjoying just kind of, you know, playing through this.
Right. This is, yeah, from the makers of Kirby's Epic Yarn and Yoshi's Woolly World and all that stuff.
Which I have really liked all their other games. This, I mean, it really is, you know, the Switch showing its age, even with something that is not, you know, you would think not technically very demanding. It just looks very rough around the edges. And, yeah, it's fine. I could see, yeah, it's a great little kids game. It's a great first game.
They've really positioned this one the whole time. They've been showing it off as well. It's like, this is for children. We mean it this time.
Yeah.
Even like the Kirby games, they'll be easy, but then they'll be like the final worlds will get kind of dark and like weirdly intense and like full-on anime mech kind of weird stuff will happen like in the final bits of your Kirby's.
Yeah, and they'll chuck in a hard boss or two in a Kirby game that's not like literally for children, but
yeah, and this is like a kind of a similar thing where you're going through these different rooms, getting these different costumes that have different abilities, and I just kind of found it a little slow, but it would be a great one to sit and play through with a child.
Did they chuck one out last year at some point that we kind of went, oh, this one's actually for kids? What am I thinking of?
I mean, they put out, they did Return to, what was it? Return to Dreamland Deluxe?
Yeah, there was that Kirby.
Not that one.
But that one was probably, didn't
Mario
really.
Mario and Donkey Kong,
towards
maybe?
Towards the back end of last year, somewhere in that back half, I remember being like, oh, this one's actually for kids. Oh, it was Detective Pikachu too. That's what
Yeah, right.
Glad we got to the bottom of that mystery, Detective Pikachu.
Everyone was going to go out and not buy any Nintendo games until they found out.
Yeah.
But thank God.
But I've been going back through some old games in the catalog. I picked up Kid Icarus Uprising on the 3DS. I played it a bit back in the day and went back to that. It's cool. It's an on-rails shooter. It's a cool...
Shooter! Jurassic Park.
Hell yeah. Oh,
didn't get it.
First person shooter!
Is it a is it like a point blank, like shoot 'em, time crisis thing?
Third person, right? You're flying around and then you sort of got bits where you're on the ground. It's like each level's kind of divided into two bits.
Right.
But it's cool. It's like Nintendo in the 3DS era, they really got into some areas that I love when they get into where they're just like, hey, this thing that we haven't touched in 20 years, here's just randomly a new one of the, I'd love to see them start doing, because it's a good game. I feel like people got really hung up on the control scheme. So you're using your control pad to fly around and then you had to use the touch screen and the stylus to aim with.
Right.
And I just feel like that was the thing that got so much attention when it came out. And it also, you could buy this attachment, like that was a second before they made the new 3DS that had a second stick.
Right.
So much of the narrative around the game when it came out was this like weird control style that...
Especially at that time, people were sick of like touch controls and their implementation on like phones and stuff like that, especially people really off motion
and for a handheld, it just meant that you couldn't... You kind of had to be sort of sitting at a desk to kind of hold it in one hand and then be using the...
Right.
I think they even put out like a little stand that you could sit it on to use.
So many peripherals for this game.
And that was...
For the massive Kid Icarus return.
I mean, all the stuff about... All the actual like qualities of the game got lost in the whole narrative of all that stuff around it. Because it's made by the guy who makes Smash Brothers. It was his kind of, pet project thing, I think. But it's cool. I feel like every now and then it comes up, like, especially, throughout the life of the Switch, it was like, hey, what about a remake of this where you just use the two sticks? And for whatever reason, I don't know. I just don't think that's ever going to happen, but maybe a new one.
Is it sort of like Panzer Dragoon?
Yeah, a little bit.
Are you doing 3D like that as well? Like the looking to your left and right, or... It's kind of all in front of you, Panzer
Dragoon. It's all... The camera is, like, fixed, so you can't sort of choose your path. You can just choose where you sit on the screen.
The reticle.
Reticle is. So you're moving Pit and you're also moving the aim thing and you've got, like...
Is his name not Kid Icarus?
No, it's Pit.
It's Pit.
All right.
You didn't know that?
Yeah, I guess I knew that from Smash Brothers, but it's just a weird thing to remember.
Yeah, Pit. P-I-double-T.
All right.
So you're holding down the L trigger to shoot, or if you're... If you can build up a charge if you take your finger off it. And so it's like it is pretty simplistic controls because you've only got, assuming that you're holding the stylus in your other hand, you've only got that like one finger. So it does kind of work well in that sense that it's like a pretty simplistic control style, but it's fun. It's very like there's just constant... I think maybe this is another thing that some people didn't like about it at the time. All of the story and what's happening is delivered to you while you're playing the game. So on the bottom screen, you've got this blocks of text and little sort of, Persona style, just static images of what character is talking.
Mm-hmm.
But all the dialogue stuff is just kind of happening at you while you're playing the game, which is a little kind of hard to take, can be a bit hard to take in.
Yeah.
But it also
does.
This
is like 10 years prior to TikTok videos as well.
Yeah.
They really figured out we need the castle, whatever, running down the bottom.
Yeah.
And then watching the Kid Icarus version of Family Guy up the top.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I wonder how, it probably does, probably does register. Like if you put it in front of a 22-year-old, they'd probably love it.
Yeah.
Get ready with me while I shoot all of these guys down on the bottom screen.
And then there's someone playing with slime off to the side
as well. Yeah, someone like hydraulic press crushing different Nintendo characters.
But it is very like it. I think people kind of responded a bit negatively to it at the time because it felt very busy. But playing it now, especially for something that is just like a purely handheld game, it does make it feel kind of like weirdly like robust.
Right.
Like the fact that it does make it feel like a very impressive, full-bodied game. Like like there is so much going on all at the one time that does make it feel, because the you have such limited controls at your disposal. Like, you really are just holding, like, one button to shoot and that's it.
Yeah.
So it does make it feel like there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Because there kind of is. But I'm really enjoying revisiting it. I liked it at the time.
Yeah, I feel like that's what I remember people saying about it at the time, was that thing that you kind of mentioned before of, like, there's a good game trapped in here.
Yeah.
Right. That's difficult to get to because of the awkward controls. Yeah,
sounds like the developers flew a bit too close to the sun.
Oh.
Yeah, like that story about Pit.
I could see them taking another pass at this on a Switch 2 with, like, nice graphics, just normal control scheme, and have all this stuff be sort of, like, separated out.
Well, they've got to have some remasters on the Switch 2. That's like, true. They've already done a bunch for the Switch.
I feel like they probably wouldn't even bother remastering this because they would have to, because well, that's of the what dual they're screen doing now. Nature
Luigi's,
of it.
Luigi's Mansion 2 was a 3DS game they're just sort of chucking back out.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe you'll get your wish.
Yeah. Maybe I will get my wish. Well, my wish would just be like a sequel to this, but anyway.
Well, have realistic wishes.
Yeah.
The genie's not a magician.
Yeah. I've also been playing a bit of Elite Beat Agents on the DS.
What was Elite Beat Agents?
Elite Beat Agents is a touchscreen rhythm game.
Oh.
Where you're doing like, you're tapping stuff on the bottom screen with the stylus and sort of in time to the music, and then there'll be things where you've got to, like, grab, you know, like, drag the stylus along in time with the little ball that's going along, and
it's
spin
a team
a
of like
around.
Superhero cheerleaders, right?
They're like kind of a
by cheering.
Secret agency thing, and it'll be like, this girl wants to ask her boyfriend to go steady, but he's not paying attention to her. Help me, Elite Beat Agents, and then you come in and sing Skater Boy.
Yeah, I was gonna say Skater Boy.
Skater Boy is like the second level in it. And
great.
I was like, this is really cool.
Nice.
Yeah, fun game.
That specific form of rhythm game reminds me of, no spoilers, one in Final Fantasy Rebirth.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right?
It is that.
Yeah, great.
Which were, there were a few, like, arcade ones, I guess, that this sort of thing came out of.
Because
I think there's a few of them in Japan, Osu something, Owendon or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
A few more Elite Beat Agents games, but just...
Even just like the whole thing of it being a touchscreen rhythm game, and it came out around the era of the Guitar Hero and so kind of going, well, we've got these games where you're actually playing the instruments. I remember seeing it at the time and never engaging with it because it seemed like, well, why would this be fun? Just tapping a pen on a screen in time with the music when we're deep in the era of actually playing drums or
Guitar Hero DS, like, had a thing you plugged into the Game Boy Advance port that was four buttons.
Oh, really?
And you'd hold the DS on the side. I think it came with a wrist strap as well, and like play it more like the accordion than a guitar.
Weird
Al Simulator.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Oh man, I'd love that.
Yeah,
but yeah, really enjoying that.
Doing
and
a bunch of parody songs of like, I'm a little plumber.
Yeah.
Duh. I am stupid and I'm dumb. I don't know what his songs are like these days.
Well, I think, I mean, speaking of Weird Al, I think there's a case to be made that his song Word Crimes, which is his parody of Blurred Lines,
yes.
The cancelled song, Word Crimes should just become the actual version of that song.
Yeah.
Because the backing track's great.
Yep.
It's catchy as hell.
Yep.
The lyrics of the original one are so dodgy and it will never be played in public ever again. So we just, you know, you're at a wedding, you drop Word Crimes, people are like, yeah, okay, this is a bop.
It
He's
is
singing about grammar.
Very funny that even then Weird Al was like, I think this song should be about crime.
Yes.
Well. He knew in the back of his head. And I've also been playing a SNES game that I bought in Japan, but I've been playing it emulated. It's a game that never came out in the West called Mario and Wario. It was one of the few, maybe one of only two games to use the SNES mouse.
Oh, nice.
I think.
Yeah.
I think it never came out in the West because, they just were like, the people aren't buying this fucking mouse. What were we thinking?
No one wants to Mario paint.
Mm. But
I did.
Works great on an emulator. Use the computer mouse as a... I thought there was maybe going to be a bit of tooling around to get it to work, but you just click a button and just straight away.
Nice.
So the setup of the game is Wario, that dastardly fella, he's dropped a bucket on Mario's head.
Oh, no.
Mario can't see.
He's always got a scheme.
And he's always got a little scam. And so it's like Mario's kind of walking along and you're with the mouse, you're controlling a little fairy that's going around and hitting switches, filling in blocks that don't exist and making a little path to guide Mario to the end.
Cool.
And there's like...
Yeah, nice.
The Magurio.
Yeah. There's 10 worlds, 10 levels in each, so there's a lot in it. And it was made by the director of the Pokemon games, the first Pokemon games. I think it might have been the first thing he did after that, maybe. But it's cool. It's really, really good. And it weirdly, it's all in. So it never came out outside of Japan, but it's all in English. So I think they were planning to bring it out, and then they just were like, this, no one owns this. And like, it would be impossible to play with a controller, so there's no way they could have patched that in. But it's worth tracking down, because it's a fun little game.
Head over to Japan, get that secondhand copy.
Yep, and then download a ROM of it.
Yeah. Easy peasy.
Otherwise, you'll go to jail.
And stare at the boxed copy. It is really nice to fire up a ROM and just be looking at the box and being like, I'm allowed to do this.
I mean, at the very worst, it's a grey area.
No wrongdoing is being committed here, because I'm playing a backup of something that I own.
Yeah, that's the law.
That's the law.
As long as you're not on an oil rig.
Yeah, I played two games that I legitimately acquired as well, mm-hmm. as Tommy did. Mm-hmm. One of them is on the Playdate. I'm back into the Playdate after having a crack of Mars After Midnight.
Yep.
This was just one that jumped out to me on the catalog, which is their like little online store now, which hooks up with a lot of those creators who were doing that sideloaded stuff, the mm-hmm. itch.io, you know, games. And the one I played this week was called Jolly Chimp Champ, and it absolutely got me on the name. Mm-hmm. Beautiful name for a game.
Jolly Chimp Champ.
Jolly Chimp Champ. And this is a puzzle game. The only controller you use is the crank.
Okay.
And you're basically, each level you're looking at sort of a bird's eye view, and you have conveyor belts that are run by turning the crank. Mm-hmm. Some of them will be running opposite ways. Some of them, you know, whatever, they all interact. And your goal is to move a little chimp man who's sitting on one at the start to a goal. And so you got to crank him along those conveyors. But there will be like obstacles. There will be like cannons shooting. So if you get hit, instant fail.
Yeah.
You'll have to, sometimes there will be a sort of like a little roundabout conveyor belt where like you get him onto that, and then it stops, and you continue to crank, and it'll like swivel him around.
Yeah.
And then it'll be like, okay. And then once you start cranking the opposite way, he'll like go onto the whatever conveyor belt you've
right. Oh, cool. I was going to ask, how do you switch your Jolly Chimp Champ between different conveyor belts?
So, and he's actually a chimp. He's not just a regular guy.
How happy is he?
Yeah, he's a regular guy who, he is a chimp.
He's an actual chimp.
He's a little monkey with symbols.
Okay.
Right. Symbols okay. guy. Yeah. But it'll be like you'll be cranking him along, you know, one way, and then it'll drop onto the next conveyor belt. But if you continue to crank the same way, maybe it'll drop him into a little hole. So okay. It's like, okay, got to stop, reverse crank him up this way. And then, yeah, like there will be obstacles that will like, and so every conveyor belt is turning at the same time when you turn the crank.
Yeah.
So like you'll start turning it and your chimp will be going along, but another conveyor belt might have a little brick on it that you drop onto the conveyor belt in front of the chimp. And so instead of moving the chimp all the way to the goal, if you do that normal sort of series of cranks, you'll end up putting the brick on the goal. Chimp can't get there. So you've got to be like, okay, well, I've got to crank this along, then I've got to dump this on a different conveyor belt without losing my chimp. You know, so it's that kind of philosophy of the puzzles. And yeah, some of it's timing based when there's like cannons that will like shoot every 2 seconds and you got to, you know, sort of pace it out and stuff like that. It's very simple, but I'm like 25 levels in or something, 30 levels in, and it continues, it evolves, it throws more challenges at you, and every level, like if you do it correctly, could be done in 10 seconds. Cool. But it's often about finding out that correct way to get him through.
How many levels roughly do you reckon?
I don't know. I've given it a good couple of sessions, it's a $6 game.
Yeah, nice.
So
I feel like that's where the Playdate really thrives. The $6 puzzle game.
Absolutely.
With an interesting little...
You don't want to be looking at that thing or holding it for like much longer than the amount of time that a game like that would... Because it's so small and it's the black and white screen and everything.
And you need to sit in. Yeah. It's got no backlight, so you need to be sitting in a really specific...
Yeah, yes. You can only play from midday to 1 p.m. anyway, so...
Well, I was like
the sun does come up at 11:58 a.m. at the moment.
It's horrible being at... the South Pole.
Yeah.
It didn't It didn't. Oh, so there's a demo of it that contains 25 levels. Oh, wow. And the full version contains 100 levels and an unlockable speedrun mode.
Okay.
So, cool. Yeah, about a quarter of the way through.
Nice.
Yeah, I recommend it.
Have you done any one of the games that is in the batch of actual games that you get on the Playdate? Have you done any Pick Pack Pup?
No, I have not.
That's probably my favorite one on there.
Okay.
Just a fun little puzzle game. Little match three kind of thing.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, similar thing that kind of keeps sort of intensifying as it goes along.
It's right. It's a huge platform for a silly game name.
Oh, yeah.
It's really the place for it.
Yeah. But yeah, if you have a Playdate, and like we were saying the other week, maybe if you have a Playdate account and play on the web, you can play these games.
I didn't look up if that's possible yet.
We'll update, never look folks. We still haven't looked this up. We got to check back in next week.
But also, we did say it seems like you can just buy a Playdate and they'll ship it to you straight away. So if you are one of those people who always wanted to and maybe was concerned about, the wait time or the amount of games that there were available on it, there's fucking heaps now.
I think there's enough good stuff on it to truly recommend as a little extra if you're someone who, likes collecting this stuff, interesting little different experiences.
Exactly.
There are enough things on there that you can't, even with an account, mm-hmm. The crank does make it feel so different.
Yeah.
You've got to be into the gimmick.
Yeah.
It's a cool gimmick.
Like playing Game Boys.
Yeah, still. If you like your little gizmos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heck of a gizmo.
It's fantastic. And I also think I mentioned maybe that I was having a battery issue. They resolved it for me. They were just like, plug it into the power and let it charge for 24 hours.
It just sounded like the solution from the start was going to be.
I was waiting for this. It turns out it was my fault all along.
No, it was they were this has happened before. You've got to get it, go through a full fucking cycle. And then it'll sort of figure itself out, which it has. So that's great.
That was such a tech thing of back in the day, you buy this thing and it's got 0% battery and you need to charge it for 24 hours. It was always such a bummer getting the thing out of the box, and it's like, I want to fucking...
And let it fully empty before you ever charge it again, is not the case anymore.
No. And I played another game this week that was free. It's free on Steam.
Ooh.
And it's got maybe the best, we're talking about good names on the Playdate, Doronko Wanko, which means Muddy Dog.
Oh, a couple of dog games. It's dog week.
Yeah. So
neither of them are dog. Well, that one is.
This game, it's published by Bandai Namco.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of three that they dropped for free, I guess, yesterday or 2 days ago when this comes out. The other two I didn't play, but there was what was that? Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, where you're kind of zooming around on little little tracks and grinding and stuff and doing stuff. But anyway, this is one of them. It's the best one, in my opinion. It's you play as a little Pomeranian, and you're in a little house. It's basically reverse House Flipper or Splatoon if you were just a dog and you wanted to make everything muddy.
Okay.
You got to mess up the house.
You got to mess up that goddamn house.
Okay.
There's a birthday party happening or something, and it's set up with these really good, very professional, cool, fun, illustrated, little panels, little animated, comic panels of nice little family, going to have a big birthday party.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Here comes the dunk. The dog.
The Doronko.
Here comes Wank Dog.
I think Wanko means dog, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that is good.
Yeah. Wanko.
Wanko. I think a bunch of the family goes out. The mum's at home. She falls asleep. She's been doing all the work, obviously. She falls asleep. And then it's time for little Wanko to roll in the mud. And then it sort of has given you, there'll be paw prints that you will see as you start to cover them with mud. They'll sort of start to glow. And you'll follow the paw prints to an area, living room, whatever, which will have basically a symbol on the ground of the dog's face, a little Pomeranian. And your goal is to reveal and cover these 12 of these symbols throughout the house.
Mm.
And so most of it is done by I was playing on PC, WASD moving around, right click to roll in mud, left click to shake mud everywhere. And once you've shaken some more mud around, you can go and roll in the same mud. So it's not like you have to go to some like you unique mud spot. The mud. You're just re-upping your mud, like Splatoon, right? Yep. When you dive into the ink. So yep. It's exact same sort of philosophy. And then there will be bits where it's like, oh, there's a symbol on the wall, so you've got to activate this fan and then shake mud in front of the fan and it'll blow it up on the wall.
Great.
You unlock...
This sounds satisfying.
Oh, yeah. It's so satisfying. It is very, very short. A free game. It's like half an hour, basically.
Yep.
You're basically going through this house, going through each of the rooms, finding these 12 symbols, covering them with mud. Some of them... hidden, some of them are like in an area that you have to like do a incredibly simple like environmental puzzle to open that area.
Yeah.
But it's just so fun and cute and like
cool.
It's the more like you cover, the more area you cover, the more like money the cleaning bill racks up.
Yeah.
You will hit these milestones of getting like a little hat that shoots out. Like a little elephant hat where the trunk shoots out like blue paint.
Yeah.
Or like a little, you know, I don't want to ruin them all because there's like not many and
right.
It's a free game and everyone should play it. But yeah, little things like that so, that sort of augment your making a mess.
Sick.
This sounds really good.
It's really, really fun. I don't know why it's only like a demo that goes for half an hour because it should be a full game.
Is there any view that you know of to making these a full game or are these proof of concepts for something?
Maybe that's
later,
why they put them all out for free.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Also, the game launches in Japanese, and if you have like you know Google Translate camera, you can go to the menu and change it to English, but it's just in Japanese by default.
Right,
that's
right.
Funny.
Having said that, I played the entire game without changing the language and found that out afterwards.
Cool. Yeah.
So you really don't have to know that.
And MES like, is the universal language.
Yeah, and like the keys and stuff, like it's saying like, you know, E, like it's a picture of the E key and then it'll have Japanese. So you're like, oh, I'll just try something. Yeah,
I'll just push that key. I'll just push that happens. Key.
All but right, like I quick said, game it is.
It's WASD and right and left click and that's it.
Cool.
And it's really charming and fun and like cute design, good visual design. It's not like just I think the other two are a bit kind of like generic game looking.
Yeah, you sent us the Steam link for this and it looks cool.
Yeah, it's got a great style and it's just super, super fun. So if you do like Splatoon, if you do like those, like the reverse of a power wash simulator, basically.
In Portal 2, when you get that white gloop one, I covered the whole place in the white gloop, though, just because, like, that's what I do.
Yeah. Nice. What about in the game? What about... Yeah, so give this a crack.
Cool.
Especially if you love cute dogs.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this... I'm that.
Yeah.
That me.
Cute it little
me.
White dogs.
It me. Oh. Well, that's going to do us for another episode of Filthy Casuals. Thank you for listening. Come and see us live at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. We got our first show coming up April the 7th and then the 14th and the 21st at the Cooper's Inn, 3 p.m. on Sundays.
Yeah.
Filthycasuals.com.au. Get on the Patreon, support the show, get our bonus show every week that we do. And check out our YouTube channel, heaps of Let's Plays and one-off videos and all that kind of stuff that we do on there, hundreds and hundreds of videos.
Yeah.
If you want to see us playing video games. That's going to do us for this week. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every installment of Filthy Casuals.
Dragon's Dogma 2. Oh, you mean Dragon's Chasing Amy.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.